Everyone, and welcome to Something New. This is something we've been looking forward to for quite some time. We were going to do this a couple of months ago, but we ran out of time at our HannahCon. We were supposed to do it then, but we ended up not having enough time to do it with all the other activities we had to do that weekend. So we didn't do it then, so we are doing it now. But I want to introduce you to our guest GM for this game. Say hi, Jonathan.
Hey, how's it going, everyone?
So if you guys don't know, Jonathan is one of our editors. He was our primary editor for most of last year, or all of last year, I think.
About a year and a half.
And now Wesley takes on some of them as well. But he is the main, if you listen to the main show, Jonathan edits that. And then I do the music and stuff. But yeah, he's been fantastic. If you like how the show is edited, then you can blame Jonathan.
Blame.
That's I mean, you'd be blamed for good things. I don't know. But anyways, we are playing a game called 10 Candles, which should be really, really interesting. And Jonathan, would you like to go ahead and explain how this game works?
Absolutely. So 10 Candles is something called a tragic horror RPG. And it's called that way because you're just supposed to feel really sad by the end.
Great.
Yeah, so hooray. Lovely.
So basically telling our fans up front, like, this is going to be a sad one.
And for once, right. You can send hate mail to Jonathan. So.
Ah. Oh, please don't.
I'll send you all the hate mail on Discord when we get it.
Thank you. But this is one of those sorts of stories where, from the beginning, you know what the end is. This is a story about the end of the world and how your characters are struggling but ultimately fail to survive, but highlighting the human condition, how even in the midst of darkness, you're still trying to achieve your dreams. All that fancy stuff, you know? Yeah, so we can go ahead and get into the rules if you guys want.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So 10 Candles is measured by, or it's sort of like a movie. So it takes place in 10 scenes, and each scene is represented by a single candle. And what we're going to do at the start of every single scene, do you want me to break this down as it becomes relevant, or do you just want me to just vomit all the rules right now?
Keep it to whatever we need to know to get started, and you can kind of explain how things work as we go along.
Okay, so what's going to happen, these characters, we're going to be working together, me, the GM, and them, the players, we're going to be working to try to craft a narrative together. The game actually says bring no notes to the start of this campaign, which makes it my favorite because I have to do as little work as possible. It's really nice.
It's good stuff.
Right, but we're all going to be working together to try and make a compelling final story for these characters. And this is going to be taking place through something called conflict rolls. And depending on how many candles you have, that's how many dice you get to roll. And if you succeed, if you get a 6, you get to do whatever you want. You get narration rights. But if you roll a 1, you lose that die. And you keep rolling every single time, and you get fewer and fewer die each time until finally you don't land on a 6 and you end the scene. Then you darken one candle. Then everything starts again, and now you have 9 candles. But then that means the threshold for failure is a little bit lower, and it's just gradually tightening around you until you've got 1 candle left. Oh no, we're about to die, and then everyone's sad, and that's the game.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Yep.
I like it.
I'm sad we can't release this on Halloween.
Yeah.
This would be a perfect Halloween show.
I'll just roll all ones and just lose all of my dice immediately.
I'm also very sad.
Oh, so I'll lose the dice for everybody.
You'll lose everyone's dice.
Even better.
I'm also very sad that the timing didn't work out for this at HannahCon, because it would have been so atmospheric to be like all around a table with 10 candles glowing, and then we're putting them out as we play.
Yeah, because we were all together. That was the fun. But it's okay.
This is still going to be tons of fun. I'm just saying, like, I love that atmospheric aspect of this game.
Yes. Yeah. On the upside, we did get to shoot shotguns, so that was, you know, pretty
that
cool.
is true.
That was fun. My shoulder still has, like, a remembering pain.
Yes, it still hurts.
No, it doesn't still hurt. I'm just like, whenever I remember it, my shoulder
just...
Oh,
war
like,
wound.
I can remember the pain.
Yeah. So the very first thing we need to do is make your guys' characters. So what you're going to do first, you're going to make... You would do this on note cards, but you can just use like a notepad or your phone or your computer. And you're going to want to make a virtue and a vice for your characters. And you want to keep these as vague as possible, because the more vague it is, the more ways you can fit it into the roleplay. And then a virtue can be something like, you're quick, you're clever, you're flirty, you're smart, you're strong... Any of those attributes you want to use. Typically, try to keep it to one or two words. The less descriptive, the better.
I have some ideas.
Perfect. And then after that, you're going to want to have a vice. I think we know. Same exact rule. You're mean. You're cunning. You're manipulative. Any sort of negative trait. So we can do this one of two ways. You can either use these for your character you're making, or the game says that you can pass your virtue to the person to your right, and you pass your vice to the person on your left.
Let's do them for our own character so it doesn't mess up anyone's character.
I had a feeling
concept.
You'd say that, yeah. I think that's good. And then after that, you're going to want your character's moment. That's the thing they're trying to do before the world ends. I think some of the examples are, you write it like, I will experience my moment when I'm able to have that last drink in the bar, or hug my wife, or pet my dog. It can be as serious or as goofy as you want. Sort of like Zombieland, I think, where the guy wanted the last Twinkies. Isn't that something from the movie?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. Which could be really relevant in space, because you took all the astronaut Twinkies. We got to go back to Earth to get the Twinkies, man. Although, yeah. Andrew, I think you had something about Earth, right?
We'll get to that, but I do have something Earth-related for this.
Perfect. Okay. And then after that, once you have your moment, you're going to... Okay, now this one's going to be interesting. Can I have a volunteer from the audience real quick?
I volunteer as tribute.
Wait, excellent. But we're not the audience, we're the players.
Technically,
oh, shoot,
yes.
You're right.
One of you all audience members out there has to volunteer for something. You can't know what it is, but
right.
Whatever, I'll do the thing.
So, Susanna, what we're going to do, we're going to be swapping brinks with each other. So a brink is what a person is capable of when there is nothing left. Like, we're all, you know, pretty hunky-dory, but then when there's nothing left, Hannah's gonna smack Wesley with a baseball bat to steal his food, right? That's what happens when there's nothing
that
left.
Sounds
in
right.
So, yeah. So for your brink, you'll basically say, I am capable of sacrificing or stealing or lying or destroying. But Susanna, what you're going to do, you're going to be riding the brink for the antagonist of the story.
Oh my.
So the antagonist is called them. It's sort of like Father from Kids Next Door, if you remember that, or just like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So the opponent in this story, we make it up together. It can be zombies, it can be nanomachines, eldritch gods, really whatever. So what you're going to do, you're going to write, I have seen them, and then establish a strength. So you can say, like, move with the shadows, whisper promises to me, drag victims into a meat effigy, whatever you want to do. And you're the one who's going to start establishing the monster as we build it through the story.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you got lots of ideas, huh?
Oh.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to write your brink, Susanna. I'm going to write, they have seen you do something.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I'll send that to you in a second. I'll just keep going over the rules. Okay. And then after that, you're going to give a brief description of your character. Like, oh, I am Leroy Jenkins, 5'2", male, and your occupation. Like, oh, I was a pharmacist or something. That's really it. And then your virtue, vice, moment, and brink, you're going to shuffle the order with the brink at the very bottom. So pretty much your virtue, vice, and moment, put in any order you want. And like if they were note cards, which we would have done physically, whatever's on top, that's what you try to live out first. So now that we've got the characters done, we can go ahead and describe the module. I say module, but I think we all just kind of made it together back at HannahCon. So in the world of Tin Candles, everyone woke up one morning and the sky was dark. There were no clouds, no stars, just blackness above them. And naturally, everyone freaked out. They thought the world is ending. What is going on? But if there's one thing that people are good at, it's improvising to horrible circumstances. I think we honestly saw that a little bit with COVID. No matter how bad things get, we eventually adapt. We make it the new normal. And then people began to get used to this darkness. They began to adapt to it. Life started to return to normal. But after about a week, they arrived. And we don't really know what they they, we don't really know what they are yet. That's what we're going to be describing. But these things, these people, these creatures began rampaging across the earth, killing, destroying, mutilating. There seemed to be no way to stop them. And eventually people realized that these things only had one weakness. They were weak to light. So then you can probably see what happens from there. Everyone freaks out, turns on all the lights, blows the power grid, just makes things even worse, and the world is just in a really sad state. But you guys don't know any of this, because you guys aren't even on the Earth. Where are you guys at?
The moon!
We are on the moon, on a moon base.
The moon, right. Yeah, so you guys are on this base. What do you guys want to call the moon base?
The moon base.
Alpha Moontari?
I'm going to call it, we could call it like Outpost, then some like alphanumeric characters. We could go with like a cool name, like, you know.
Outpost, what Beta, is, Gamma.
What is like TV in phonetic alphabet?
TV is Tango Victor.
Yeah, let's call it Tango Victor's like Thornvale TV.
Oh.
Oh. Okay.
Let's call it Outpost Tango Victor.
Yeah.
Outpost Tango Victor. All right, so Outpost Tango Victor, it's this pretty big moon base. We're a couple decades into the future. This has been a joint effort between the United Nations, and even around the moon, you can see the skeletal structure of what looks like a shipyard. Humanity is just at the very beginning of starting to build generational spaceships, ships that will go hundreds of years into space to explore new planets. It's not built yet, but it's in the process. And you guys at the base at Outpost Tango Victor had a front row seat as you watched some sort of black veil completely cover the Earth. You don't know what it is, but all of a sudden, there were no radio communications, no television, no satellite. They can't send to you, you can't send to them. As far as you know, the world has just been cut off from the rest of space. And you didn't really know what to do from there, honestly. What do you guys think you would have done? Try to contact them? Try to find a ship back home?
Definitely try to contact them first.
Oh, yeah.
Try to contact them, yeah. So you guys definitely attempted to reach out to them. Still no messages. You guys were in anxious, just tense anticipation, waiting to see what happened. And then a couple of days after the Earth went dark, something arrived on the space station with you all. You're not quite sure what it was, but you recall very vividly the first several hours. There were alarms, sirens, gunfire, screaming, and lots of blood. And blood is very creepy in zero-G because it just kind of floats and congeals around you. Very, very gross. And at this point now, you guys are inside either your room or a bunker or an airlock. That's up for you guys to decide. And the sirens have stopped. The screams have faded. As far as you can tell, you are all alone, and there is something on this station with you. You guys have barricaded your room. You guys are inside this kind of chrome, clean spaceship bedroom, lots of bunks lining the walls, and you've probably stuffed a bunch of furniture against the doors to try to keep yourself safe. You don't hear anything outside at this moment, and this is where we can finally introduce your characters.
All right.
I will say I don't think I'd be in the same place as everyone else.
Ooh, I was going to say the same thing.
Oh, splitting the party at the beginning.
Let's get started. Let's get started with this.
Yeah.
So I definitely
would be inside of a barracks or a bunker.
I was going to say, maybe we all have our own, like, either we're all barricaded separately, or at best, me and Wesley's characters are maybe found each other and barricaded together or something.
Okay. Yeah, so then one of you groups, just go ahead and give me a piece of that narrative pie. Let's see what happens.
Why don't you two start?
Yeah, we can start. Do you want to go first, Wesley, or do you want me to go first?
I can go first. So in this kind of bunker room, you're going to see the doors are already locked, of course, and standing there, his gun on his shoulder there, actually pointed toward the door, I think, you would see my character, Dalton Stryker. He is dressed in these dark military fatigue, stands 5'10 with boots, and he is the, we discussed that this base was kind of the, like, it was a colony slash military presence, you know, there was a military presence here, and
yeah, absolutely.
And this guy, my character, he's the top dog of military guys around here, and I'd
he's
like to
the commanding officer, the base
yes,
CO.
He's the commander, and since Jonathan said that there was a commotion and gunfire and lots of blood earlier, I'd like to think that he had a He had a squad. He doesn't have that squad.
Yeah, I was about to say keyword anymore. Had, maybe.
had. Not anymore. They are gone now. Yeah, he's got the gun pointed at the door, and he's just heard all this commotion stop. How long ago was it?
That's probably been a couple of hours.
Okay, so then I think he's just been pacing and waiting, and of course he tried to communicate with, that was one of the first things I tried to do, was communicate with Earth, and nobody's responding. So he's trying to fall back onto some kind of, like, well, in the manual it said, but of course there was no manual for this scenario. And so then I think he just turns back to maybe one of the bunks and sees Andrew's character and says, It's going to be all right. We have to gather more information. I'm sure it's been a while. It's been several hours, actually. I don't want to assume there's nothing there, but I don't know.
So so your character is looking over at this this other man kind of sitting on the bunk, and I'll just say that you used to have a team. If you were to consider this guy to be part of your team, you would have been scraping the bottom of the barrel, probably. He is not a military man. My character, I guess I just kind of decided on the spot, but he's going to be like a spaceship engineer. So his whole purpose for being here is he was a civilian engineer. I guess I'm speaking from experience now. He was on the team helping build this kind of generational spaceship that Jonathan was talking about. So he came up to the colony early to help start that process with the plans that his family would someday kind of join the colony once things were a little bit more set up. So he's been here alone kind of thinking about his family who are back on Earth right now, and he has no contact from them. So this whole experience has been kind of nerve-wracking for him. He's a 38-year-old man with red hair and blue eyes, kind of medium build, you know, not a weak, wimpy little guy, but definitely not a warrior or a fighter. And he's just kind of sitting on the bunk there. I like to imagine that maybe, like, you came into this room and found him because he was, like, trying to figure out what to do next. I think maybe, like, early stages of this, so we had no comms from Earth. That would have taken out, like, our ability to navigate back to Earth. So there's probably been, like, a no-fly order that you probably gave out that I guess still technically in effect, you know, but the base is what it is now. So my character just kind of looks up to you. He's just like, did you see them, sir? I still don't really know what's going on. I just heard all the gunfire and decided to get into hiding. But I mean, yeah, I think you're right. We have to do something. We have to get off the base, don't we?
Might be possible, but in order to do that, we'd have to get to the lower end. That's where the ejection pods might be stored. Although this whole scenario is not. It's not. We have no basis for this, and there are no orders for this. But I know for a fact we cannot stay in here and wait to die. And to answer your other question, no, I did not see them. All I did was fire, and fire, and fire, and here. Hear the cries from my men. They took them from me. And he kind of lapses into silence because he's being reminded again that he's the last one standing.
And you see my character kind of gulp, and he's just like, I guess you're right. We can't just sit here and die here. Do you at least have something for me to shoot with?
He reaches maybe into a belt, and he's got, I'd like to think being the commander, he's not short for firearms, so
I'd imagine
he hands him, or he takes out a little handgun pistol, and he says, you know how to shoot this, son?
Just point and shoot, right? I haven't done much myself, maybe back when I was younger.
Just point and shoot. No! No, you don't just point and shoot. Here is how you do. And he, like, very aggressively, like, he's...
Blow out the airlock.
He's in. But you have to understand, he's in his element now. Like, he used to be, I like to think he used to be like an instructor on Earth somewhere at some military academy. So now he's like, okay, even in this crazy situation, I know how this works. Someone doesn't know how to shoot, and I am going to show them how. And he stomps over, and he doesn't have a gentle touch. Such a thing doesn't exist for him. So he just grabs you by the collar and like hoists you up by like one hand. He's terribly strong, and he sets you on your feet, and he takes your hands as you grip it. It's like, all right, no, you hold it like that. No, not like that. No, I said like this, and then you and. He might be talking so fast you don't even catch every other word he's saying.
Yeah, I'm just like, sure, I'll figure it out. Okay, sure, I got it. And
and then like you're kind of waving the gun around. It's like, not what I'm standing here. No, behind. No, you here. Good. Now. And of course we're sealed inside a metal thing, and we're sealed inside a metal room, and obviously noise might not be a good idea, so he's not going to say, oh yes, start firing in here.
Yeah,
wondering if you were going to shoot it.
Yeah. No, not in here, especially because, like, we don't even know, like, what are the walls made of? I would think it's a possibility that if this is a space station,
we don't want to ricochet into ourselves.
That the bullet
might
just ricochet and shoot and hit somebody else. So he just very angrily, very aggressively is like, safety here. Safety here, trigger here, hold the grip here.
But after that, once I've learned, I think I'm just gonna say, okay, sir. I'll follow you.
And I think just very slowly, there's like a handprint scan or a hand crank to open the door, and it's that classic horror movie where it opens slowly and it's creaking, and then just out there, there's either no light at all or just like,
so here's most where of the power I'm is knocked out and the lights are
flickering on and off and everything.
The lights so what's will gonna flicker happen? On and off.
And there'll be nobody there. So what happens thing? Here?
Yes. Yes.
Always.
I like how you both said yes at the same time.
So what happens here? We're going to do something called a conflict roll. We roll a conflict roll whenever there's conflict, duh, or whenever there's something uncertain that's going to happen. And if you succeed, you get narration rights. But if I succeed, I get to narrate. But the way it works, depending on how many candles there are, is how many dice you roll. And how many candles that have been extinguished is how many dice I get to roll. So are there any dice extinguished yet? Are there any candles extinguished yet?
There are no current dice.
There are no current extinguished.
I did just forget something minorly important. Yeah. My character's name is Daniel Hammond. I didn't say that earlier.
Oh, yeah, we need that name.
Yeah, Daniel Hammond.
Grandson of John Hammond?
Ha ha ha. Probably not, no.
Right, so I don't have any narrative control right now, but as you start losing candles, we're going to start butting heads trying to fight. So, Wesley, what I need you to do, go ahead and roll 10 d6s. So what you're going to do, if there is even just one 6, you will automatically win narration rights. And if you get a 1, you have to take that die away. And the die will be reset once you lose the candle. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and those things aren't mutually exclusive, right? Those are like, you could lose dice and get a 6, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. So what you can do, you can burn your moment, or you can burn your virtue or your vice to re-roll the 1s. So, for example, if you roll a 6, but then get 5 1s, you're thinking, okay, even though I succeeded, I should burn this so I don't lose as many die.
And what happens when you burn those things?
Basically, you role play how that trait helped you succeed, and then that's gone forever.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, Wesley, you go ahead and roll, and we'll decide who gets to narrate, and then after that, we're going to jump to the ladies, and we're going to see how they're doing.
Yeah. I think it would make sense for me to go last, by the way.
Oh, right, you guys aren't together. No. Okay, we'll do Hannah then.
Okay, that's a 33 for total.
1 6.
And a 1 6.
So 6 and 2 1s.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting to narrate. So if you get a 6, you automatically succeed. So you can succeed in whatever you're trying to do. But any 1s you get, those die are taken away from you. So you've got 10 die now. You got two ones. So whatever you guys roll from this time going forward is going to be 8 or less.
Okay. Ooh. Okay.
Oh, boy.
So here's how we'll do this then, Wesley. You can roll or you can embrace. Well, you probably shouldn't embrace your virtue advice in the very first roll. Why don't we save that, actually?
Yeah.
So we're going to let you guys decide how to do this. Do you want Wesley to go ahead and describe what he sees? Or do you want to be like, he opens the door, cut to the next person?
I like that.
I mean...
It's very dramatic.
There could be a cut, so then, like the door opens.
Wesley, we will make a note that you get narration rights when you open the door.
Yeah.
And then we're going to cross cut to whoever Hannah is.
Yeah.
And Hannah, you're going to have 8 die whenever you roll, because your die are communal.
Okay. Well, I guess I'll just say it, because I'm not sure how this works. I put my... Is it okay if I say what my moment is?
Yeah, you can say it if you want to.
I have it first because I put, I want to be a stowaway on a ship.
Hey, you did it. Good job.
Wow. So.
Okay. We'll have to find you another ship then. I already won the game.
I thought there was going to be like another ship we had to steal to get to Earth or something. So
I think we're still going to try and get on a ship. But
so that's good. Since we know your moment, Hannah, we can all work together to achieve that. Well, you guys can. I'll attempt to thwart you, but
yeah.
As a jerk.
I don't really know what I'm doing. I guess I'll just.
Are you running for
character.
Your life if something's chasing you? Are you in Where the mess do you hall, start? Like free food?
I will just start by describing my character.
Okay.
Her name is Norma Mann.
Norma Mann. I don't get the joke. What is it?
Norma, and then Mann, like normal man.
Okay.
There was that wasn't that didn't somebody have a character that they were telling us about in their home Monster of the Week game that was like Norm Al. Living Man or something like
that's
that.
What it was.
Oh, yeah.
Very
yeah.
Yeah. I like
Isn't that like the zombie from Gravity Falls? You're like, I am regular person Steve.
Yes, his name was Norman, but it's Normal Man.
That's it. Thank you. All right, anyways, Norma, please.
Yes,
continue.
Her name is Norma. She is only 16 years old, but just imagine goth girl that's obsessed with the occult. And she always carries around her deck of tarot cards. That's it. That's all I got.
So is she like a colonist? How is she here? Just out of curiosity.
Yeah, I guess she would be a colonist. I'm guessing at some point she was separated from the rest of her family, maybe in everything that happened. So, yeah.
Maybe you're in the cafeteria. Everyone's dead. You keep playing the death card. Like, oh no.
Yeah,
you could be running for your life, hiding in the bathroom, looking for people, whatever.
Well, since her like thing that she wants to do is, I guess she's trying to get back to Earth, but the way she wants to do it is stow away on a spaceship. I think she would be looking to see if she can make her way to wherever the escape pods or ships might be.
Sure. So how about we do this then? So you're kind of making your way down this long metal hallway. It's this connector between two of the bases, because a lot of these moon bases, you know, are kind of like segmented. I say like they're real things, but, you know, they're segmented.
Yeah.
And as you're walking, you just see all these bodies just, well, I assume the gravity still works now unless you don't want it to. But you see all these bodies slumped against the wall. You can smell the foul odor of the blood and various fluids as they've been broken and mutilated. And yeah, that's just kind of the, you're probably not feeling too great as you're walking.
Yeah, this is wonderful. I love this.
There's no flesh pits or whatever the Emerald Valley thing is.
Please no. Not that.
There's a tunnel.
The flesh tunnel. Yeah.
Flesh tunnel, thank you.
Not that.
Flesh rooms.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and just think of it this way then. So you're kind of a co-GM, Hannah. So is your character, do they encounter anyone? Do they come into an obstacle blocking their way? Or do they find something to help them? What do you think?
Well, seeing as she's like a colonist and normally not like, I'm guessing like in this part of the station, I think she's probably lost. So I think she's going to consult her tarot cards to see if they can help her decide which way to go.
Okay, good idea. So why don't we do a conflict roll then, since the outcome is uncertain. So can you roll me 8d6s, please? Let's see if that Hannah luck translates to 10 candles.
Yeah, we'll see.
Okay.
Not bad.
I got 2 sixes and only one.
So you guys will have 7 candles now. You win narration rights, Hannah. So tell me, what do the tarot cards tell you, and how does that impact what you're doing?
So the card I pulled is Strength. It says, Strength directs you to gather your bravery and fortitude to overcome a stubborn challenge, but you must not waste this power on trivialities. If that's how you say that word, trivialities?
Yes. Yeah, I think so.
Hmm.
So maybe, for example, this is just spitballing. What if the door leading to the science room where the ships are is locked? And you don't have a key, so you're thinking, maybe I need a gun or something to break this with.
Maybe
that's how you interpret the strength.
Because you need to focus on your mission of getting out of here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it says gather your bravery and fortitude. So yeah, I think breaking something open in order to and taking that path makes sense.
Yeah, that sounds very Hannah. That checks out.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So then where do you think you're going to go to try to break this door or break this keypad or whatever?
She was just in like a cafeteria area, you said?
I mean, that's up to you. I was just spitballing ideas. You literally get to say what you were doing.
Well, if the card was Strength, maybe she finds a nearby gym or athletics room.
Okay.
And sees if there's any kind of like weight or like what are the little like just like 20-pound weights?
Like
dumbbells?
Yeah, dumbbells.
Yeah, see if she can find like a dumbbell that she can use to smash into like the lock to break it.
Gotcha. Okay. Then you begin heading to the gym. And yeah, that would be interesting actually, trying to like throw weight. But Susanna, we should probably come to you now. We can finally finish this quartet and see how the heck you guys are gonna get together.
Alright, sure. So I am not in a room. I am sort of wandering through the hallways. I am about a middle-aged man. My face and head is completely shaved with just a tiny bit of growth on it from maybe a day or two. I am wearing the typical sort of terracotta reddish-brown jumpsuit of someone that is in the penal colony here.
Ah.
Mm-hmm. And importantly, on part of my jumpsuit, just above where my name is listed, there is a single red skull, which identifies me as a dangerous prisoner. I am wandering through the halls with a very large wrench in my hand. I am probably covered in blood spatter, and I'm just sort of wandering through the halls looking around.
Oof.
And I kind of stand in the middle.
Why are you doing this to me,
Susanna? I kind of stand in the middle of the hallway.
My introduction
and
was
stop.
Really bad compared to that.
You're fine. I do like that, though. If this was a movie, you're like, maybe if I get a dumbbell, we can do this. And then you just cut to hard metal music, like, duh, 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 duh. Like that SpongeBob episode
maybe even
where
like,
the Dutchman's looking for that buff guy.
Yeah.
I was about to say, maybe even, like, I know she's just, like, wandering now, but if you think this is cool,
I could
Susanna,
run into her.
I was going to say, maybe you could be, like, your intro scene is you, like, fighting off something that we don't see on screen, but it's, like, you fighting, like, you said, like, the metal music, and then it cuts you just walking down the hallway covered in blood spatter, you know?
That works, too. Yeah. I think you wouldn't see what I did, but you can see, like, a splash of red blood kind of come back at me as I start walking down the hallway. And I kind of stop in the middle of the hallway and kind of look around and look up at the signs that kind of denote where things are. And I kind of zero in on one of the signs and I just give a small nod and start walking forward again, having decided on where I'm going next.
And where are you heading, Susanna?
I'm heading towards the escape ships.
Ooh, okay. So then you head down this very long hallway, this very familiar long hallway. Lots of dead bodies there. Maybe you put some of them there earlier. I'm not sure. But eventually you arrive at this locked, pressurized door. It has a keypad, like a biometric scanner next to it. What would you like to do?
I am going to reach into my pocket and pull out a key card that has been like broken off from something else that's covered in blood and hold it up against the key card scanner.
Ooh, okay. Okay. So then let's go ahead and do a conflict roll to see if it works. And then you can narrate what happens afterwards.
Sounds good.
You're going to have 7.
All right. Yep.
Ooh, okay.
I got 2 ones.
But now 2 sixes. We have 5 die. The noose slowly tightens.
Ooh, boy.
All right. So, Susanna, you get complete narrative control over what happens.
Okay.
Go wild.
Yeah. So the key card works. And he gives a little smirk and puts it back into his pocket. My character's name, by the way, is Rhodey Keller. And you can see that on his little name tag on his jumpsuit.
Yet again, keeps... I am the only young girl character with 3 older men.
I mean, my character's not
Don't
that
make it
old,
weird,
but
Hannah.
Old enough.
I mean,
no, that's
I didn't
how it was in Absurdia, though, is what I was saying.
That's true.
It was,
it's true. I didn't mention this, but I did make my character 52 years old.
Okay.
You were pretty nimble, like running around, like beating people up.
Well, he's a military man, you know, he's got to be in shape.
Yeah, I've got to be, so I mean,
oh, I was talking about
Absurdia,
pardon me.
Yeah.
I really like your character, Susanna, like the corporate guy. We need some paperwork, guys.
Arrest that man. Arrest that man.
That was a very fun story. Anyways.
So
please,
yeah, I
Rhodey
hear,
Keller.
I start walking down the hallway and I hear some noises in one of the rooms nearby, or maybe down the hallway around the corner. I was thinking that could either be something interesting or it could be Hannah's character.
All right. Let's think about that then. Hannah, do you have any opinions about this? Because technically you two are joint together telling the story now.
He might walk around the corner to see me trying to beat a lock off of a door with a dumbbell.
Sure, that sounds good.
Okay.
You see a young goth girl trying to break down
a
door.
Yeah, young goth girl
down with the system.
Trying to break a door open.
This dangerous prisoner.
And I think Rhodey kind of tips his head to the side and watches this happen for a little while. Does she get it open?
Do you get it open, Hannah?
You have
I'm
the
not
going to
make
control.
You roll for this. Yeah.
I would love for her to get it open, but I don't think she's very successful.
Okay. Is she like a skinny little 16-year-old?
Yeah, she's just like a kid, you know? Like,
okay, yeah.
One of those kids, like, that teenage stage where you think you're, like, invincible and can
oh
do anything,
gosh.
But actually you're, like, you know,
remind me afterwards.
Foot tall and
17-year-old who stole a car at my job. Remind me to tell you guys afterwards.
Oh my
yes, please.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Okay. I think watching her kind of do this, I think he just kind of watches her for a little while, like she hasn't noticed him or anything, and he just kind of gives her, like, he kind of gives, like, a little smile, and then starts walking up to her, and I think he intentionally, like, scrapes the giant wrench he's carrying along the walls so that he'll make noise as he's walking up to her.
Yeah, I think her head immediately snaps over, and her eyes widen a little bit, and then she just starts hitting the lock faster.
You need a hand there?
I think... she like scratches her head. Do you think you could get this open?
I think he goes up to the keycard and pulls that same keycard out of his pocket and holds it up to the door.
Click! It opens.
And he
maybe
puts it
a little bit like jagged because Hannah is doing a number on the door. Like, yeah.
I think the door kind of opens probably like halfway and he like rips the rest of it open.
Ooh, a man's man. Okay.
He looks like he's done hard labor for some time. He is a built guy.
Maybe he had to like mine rocks for the colony or something.
Yeah, I think something like that. He's done like super hard labor, something involving a big a very large wrench probably.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, so the door kind of it's big enough for you guys to get through, but Hannah definitely it will never work the same way again.
You see Norma look up at... You said your name was Rhodey?
Rhodey.
You see Norma look up at Rhodey and then, like, shakily pull out her deck of cards and shuffle it and pull one off the top and look at it.
He just watches
Why don't you go ahead and tell us what it is?
Yes, please.
I love this.
I love this, too.
I love this extra dynamic to this
it
game.
It is... The High Priestess. And so the High Priestess recommends that you connect with your intuition to uncover new insights and truths, but you must be patient with the process as it will resist your efforts to control it. So I
think these are really good, Hannah. Like, these are like on point, I have to say.
I think I'm just using a random generator. Okay.
Stranger danger.
So I think takes this as is not to judge a book by its cover, essentially. And she's like, okay, this person helped me open the door, even though they look big and scary. I need to give it time to see how this person actually is. So she's going to look up at him and ask, so where are you going?
Well, I'd like to get off this piece of garbage. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I thought the escape pods ships were this way.
Yeah, I know where they are.
Can I follow you then?
I suppose if you want to.
She nods.
Okay. So let's go ahead and cut back to the boys then. Now, Wesley, if you remember, you received narration rights. This is the room that you guys had barricaded because you heard gunfire and shouting and screaming. So as you guys poke your heads out of the room, what do you see?
I don't think this is the same area from that the others were just traversing, because that wouldn't make sense. But I think he looks out and the emergency power has probably turned on. So it might be, like, if there's any light at all, it's like this low, like, dark red light that's showing in this corridor. And in the, just in this long hall, you're the gravity is still functioning. So you see, you know, lights are flickering. You're seeing, you know, like glass, like plaques and signage has been smashed. There are bodies. And of course, you know, some of them have all their pieces, some of them don't, and some of them are just solo pieces, just there. And this isn't a moment where we describe the monsters yet, because we haven't.
You don't really know what
chance.
It is yet.
That's
right.
An entirely separate thing, right? We don't. Yeah. Okay. So then, yeah, you're just seeing this. It's utterly silent. There's no real noise or anything, and at the end of this hall, they can see is like a bulb that's flickering. But he knows enough about this station. Of course, he would have had to know it for being the head military guy. He knows exactly where they are, and I would think he knows exactly where the escape pods are. And I think that's probably where he is aiming for, because he knows that if, I don't know if he knows per se if there are any colony prisoners on this station. But if there are, he knows that they're going to go straight for that as well. And even in this odd, crazy, most likely apocalyptic scenario, he has been charged with defense of this station from any and all threats, including prisoners. So
yeah, I mean, like, you would have been, like, in charge of them, I would presume, you know? Like, they would have been probably not under your command, but, like, under your...
Yes, it would have been under
the military commander. Yeah, that makes sense.
It would have been under my watch, and then this all everything happened. So yeah. You know, his sense of order has just been thrown out. But yeah. he's I think internally he's just he never showed this, but he's desperately clinging on to the natural order that I knew was gone, and yet this has some slight tether to my former life. So I'm going to keep hold of it, and
yeah. Yep.
So he's gonna, like, just advance carefully down this hall, and while the sight, yes, I mean, it does hurt, but the fact is, he's been around a long time. He's seen a lot, so he's just resolutely looking forward. He's got his gun trained, looking, listening very carefully to see if he hears anything. And I think that he comes to the end of this hall, and he turns a corner, and I think he comes across an obstacle. One of the, like, in the ceiling, I like to think that these, some parts of it are, like, smooth, like a, you know, there's nothing to support, but other parts are, like, have, like, bracers and metal beams and such in the ceiling. And I like to think that this section he's just crossed into, he turns the corner, and there is a metal beam that has fallen, and it hasn't, you know, it hasn't ripped a hole in the station or anything, but this thing is big, and they're gonna have to, like, it's blocking, like, the this next hallway. It's fallen across, and it's so big that like, they're going to have to move it or climb it or something.
Okay. Andrew, you want to go ahead and narrate what you're doing here, too?
Yeah, definitely. So I think Daniel would have been just kind of tentatively following along behind... what was your character's first name again, Wesley?
Dalton, 2Ds. Dalton, Daniel okay. and Dalton.
Dalton, okay. So yeah, I think Daniel is just kind of tentatively following behind, the commander here, Dalton. And, you know, he's got his gun out. He's just kind of being careful. He's not, like... He's definitely kind of nervous, but I wouldn't say that he's, like, an extremely timid person. He just is he's way out of his element at the same time. So he's just kind of following this this military man's lead. And we come across this beam, and he sees it. And it's clear we've got to do, like, something to get past it if this is the way that the commander says we need to go. So I think Daniel... I think he's just trying to assess it first. Does it look like if we try to shift this thing, it's going to fall? Is it better to go over? You know, all that kind of stuff. I think he's trying to analyze it, kind of using his engineering mindset to start.
Yeah, good idea. So how about you give me a conflict roll, and then you'll be able to narrate how you solve this problem.
If I get a 6, that is.
And I feel really bad for you, Andrew, because you kind of got the roll into the deal.
I have 5d6 that I get to roll. I'm at half capacity.
Exactly.
Here. Uh-oh.
Mm. All right.
Walk. This game is going to end fast.
Which we probably...
Well, that's 3 1s,
no
6s.
Andrew.
Oh, man.
Now what you can do, you can burn one of your traits, whatever's on top of your list, your vice or your virtue, and you can re-roll all of the ones. Or we can darken the candle and move on to the next scene.
Because if we get no 6s, the scene ends, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Which is not necessarily a bad thing. It just means we're...
I think I'm actually going to let the scene darken just because narratively I don't think it makes sense for me to burn this particular virtue yet.
You're just so excited, so energetic. Blah. Yeah.
Well, I haven't let loose what my virtue is yet, but we'll get there.
Keep it on the DL. Okay, yeah. So we will delete one of our digital candles, and we will transition to the next scene. Darkness falls. So what's going to happen here, we get to do something really cool. We're doing something called establishing truths. So what we're going to do, for every single candle that remains lit, each of us are going to go around and establish something that's true about the world. So for example, I might say, we all make it to the escape pod. Then Hannah might say, there's a malfunction. Andrew might say, we hear something in here with us. Wesley says, the lights go out. Susanna might say, we find a flashlight, but the batteries are low. And we just keep going around, and you can give yourself good things, and you can give yourself bad things. Just whatever you think is gonna build the tension.
Mm-hmm.
So if you guys are ready, we're gonna go, we're digital, so how are we gonna do this? We can just choose an order. So on my screen, it goes, me, Susanna, Wesley, Andrew, Hannah.
Yep.
So yeah, you guys want to do that for establishing truths?
Yeah, it's alphabetical.
Oh.
I see it as Andrew, Hannah, Jonathan, me, Wesley.
Well, he just started in the middle and went yeah.
Oh, yeah.
it's the same order.
Yeah.
I'm going to start with the first candle just because I have to say something, but then we'll go that way. That sounds good. Yeah. How about you guys put me last since I have to do the establishing thing?
Sure.
Okay.
Here's how we'll do it then. So the very first truth is this. These things are true. The world is dark. And now we go around.
Ooh. Spooky.
So now we have 8 truths left.
Okay. So that used one up. Okay.
Yes.
I think, am I first?
Yes.
Yes, you're first.
Okay. I think we arrive at the pods at the same time, all of us.
Okay.
So not spending a lot of time on the base.
Getting shaky.
Well, maybe. I mean, we'll see.
Considering yours and my things.
Yeah.
All right, then Wesley, your turn.
It
can be a good thing or a bad thing.
I think that we arrive at the pods at the same time, but in the action of arriving, Dalton has heard a sound that seems like there is something following him.
Ooh, okay.
Oh. Okay, let's see here. The world is dark. We arrive at the pods. Something dark is following our group. Are we allowed to establish things about characters specifically, or is it more about the world?
Either or, as long as the person's okay with it.
Okay, okay. Gosh. I think...
this game really puts you on the spot, doesn't
it? I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to make it even darker. I think that as this thing approaches us, the lights flicker out in this area.
Oh.
Thank you, Andrew. You're making this much more interesting for me.
Is it like feeding off the electricity? Oh my gosh.
Hannah, oh, that's up to you guys. So go ahead, Hannah. You can establish a truth about this creature. Like, the creature seems to suck the light out of the air. Or my tarot card goes up on the screwed icon. Like, oh no.
Oh my.
Actually, it would be cool if you pulled one.
That could be your truth if you want to, Hannah.
I'm trying to figure out how I can stow away on a spaceship to fulfill my moment now that we're all here in the dark. But
what if when this happens, you immediately scamper up and hide in the spaceship?
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking.
That works.
Okay, I will
say... I mean, you're a 16-year-old girl. You're compact.
Yeah, I will say my truth, or that we're saying, is Norma in the dark finds a spaceship and hides inside of it.
Okay. And then I guess it's my turn. What do I say? Gosh. Okay, let me throw you guys a bone. One of you guys stumble back and fall, and you fell on a toolbox with 3 road flares inside. All right, now it's Susanna's turn again.
But who
we got
falls?
3 more.
Who falls, yep, though?
So I'll be the last one.
Okay. Yeah. I find the road flares and pocket them all inside my jumpsuit.
Oh.
Pocketed it.
Brody pocketed it.
Wesley, and then Andrew, you're going to be the last one.
I think we've found the road flare. We get to the ship, but the amount of power, the independent power source for this ship, we will not have multiple shots to do this. We have a single chance to allow this to work, and if it fails, like, I think normally you would have multiple chances, like, you know, just run the checks again, but. But the power supply is in such a lowered state that we have one chance. We have one chance to get this right, and if we don't,
okay.
Or at least it depends That's on how many cool. ships there are. But this one that we found at least has one chance.
Okay, and Andrew closes out.
Just as we stumble upon this ship, and the commander realizes that, as far as the power is concerned, we've only got this one shot. The lights flicker back on, and the sound is gone.
The sound is gone in the entire room?
Yes. No, no, like
okay,
the sound.
I gotta write this down.
I'm saying the sound that was, like, creeping up on us, whatever creature me and the commander heard coming up behind us when the lights went out. It comes back on, but there's no more sound. Like, that sound has scampered off somewhere else.
Okay.
If it helps, I was thinking of this sound as, like, a sort of a skittering of... Perhaps several legs.
He opens the door. Thank you, Hannah.
Yeah.
Okay, so like a skittering, so maybe some
it's
multi-legged
the
abomination. The
slash
bringing dash.
Just to make sure that I understand everything that happened, we come upon each other. Something is heard skittering up behind us. The lights go out.
Road flares.
Well, no. Hannah's character jumps in the ship in the darkness.
Oh, yeah.
We find some road flares.
I hide
Rhodey pockets
in
them.
The ship in the darkness.
Yeah.
Rhodey pockets the road flares.
Yeah, as we're all scrambling in the darkness, like Rhodey finds and hides the road flares. The commander is like looking at the ship, trying to like maybe turn on some displays or something and realizes low on power, and then the lights come back on. And okay, cool.
Exactly. Okay.
And the skittering's gone.
And then this is up to you guys. What you're supposed to say at the very end, we all say in unison, "And we are alive." But that's going to be very hard to do over a podcast.
Yes.
So.
Just definitely
like,
just
yeah, we're alive.
You can just say it.
Oh, we can just rotate who says it. Yeah.
Yeah, we can just rotate who says it.
Oh, okay.
I can do the first.
So Andrew.
Or Andrew.
Well, okay. Hannah should go next because she was going to be next.
Yeah, that works.
Right, that's true. So the next truth sayer, go ahead, Hannah.
What am I saying?
And we are alive.
And we are alive. Now make sure it's gravitas, not like we are alive. Go team.
Yeah.
And we are alive.
And we are alive.
Go team.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, Spirit Week. All right, so you guys are all inside this room together. You've got, as far as you can see, one working spaceship. And Wesley's character established, you don't have much fuel to make it work. And whatever was following you has vanished. But you're not sure if it left the room or if it's just simply observing from a distance. Why don't we just see a little bit of your guys' interactions together? I know specifically, Wesley, you probably knew this convict guy that's with this 16-year-old girl who just disappeared when the lights went out.
Yeah.
Yes. And I think in the moments, they've all scrambled on and he hasn't had a chance to really gather himself. But then once everyone is and the lights are back on, he turns, sees Rhodey, and says, So, you survived inmate 21.
He smiles.
24601.
I honestly had that thought when you were describing, you know, life of hard labor. So then he's honestly not sure how to react, because if this were a normal situation, he would insist that he return to a cell, but there is no working penitentiary anymore. There's no anything. But he, I think he just very dramatically, or now Rhodey can tell that he's still, you know, he's still holding his gun. And he says, just very matter-of-factly, he goes, I'm assuming you want off this rock.
You assume, right? And he's got his, like, he's got these two, like, massive arms just kind of, like, crossed across his chest.
Yeah.
You two are facing off, and Daniel's just like, where did that girl go? Did the darkness get her? She's gone.
Not a whole lot of places she could hide in here.
And he looks at you and kind of glances around. He says, we'll deal with you eventually, but did anyone else hear that sound? That sounded as if something were following me, at least.
I think we all heard that, sir. I don't see anything, though.
Rhodey just smiles.
And he looks again at the console, and he says, it appears we have one shot. Yeah. I recall the maps properly enough. We should be able to get down there, but I'm not sure what would be waiting for us, if anything, when we did. Because look out the window, it's not like you're seeing the blue anymore.
Darkness.
Here's an idea, if you guys want to try this. What if the ship doesn't have enough fuel, and you might want to stop at the shipyard to refuel up there? Maybe that's the issue.
Yeah, I think Rhodey will go over and kind of like look at the fuel gauge, I guess.
Yeah, whatever.
And he just kind of looks at it and says, we ain't got enough to get back home. We can get to that shipyard.
So you're saying we use our one shot up to get to the shipyard? That's honestly not a bad idea. We probably can get everything we need to actually make it back to Earth from there, I would think. I work up there. I know a bit about ships.
I know they hold the supplies there. It could be worth it. Yes, if we could get there, at least we would have supplies to spare for only one ship. Yes, that is what we'll shoot. All right, everyone, now sit, buckle down. This is gonna get bumpy. Like, he immediately takes command. He's he's sitting in the pilot's chair. He's he's been taught how to fly these things.
Well, what happens when we open up the door to the pod? Do we see a certain?
I'm
someone?
Glad you asked that. I was gonna have Hannah roll a conflict for us.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
So remember, you have 9 die this time, not 10.
Okay. Oh, ooh. Look at that.
Nice.
1 6 and a single 1. Mm-hmm. So you have 8 from now on. Perfect. So Hannah or Norma, why don't you describe how you're so well hidden that no one finds you?
I think maybe this might be a little cliche, but I think she has hidden herself in like the ventilation shaft or something. I think she has pulled a panel out and like crawled into a space and then pulled the panel back and is just chilling in the ventilation.
Cool. Okay. So then you guys get inside your ship none the wiser. Wesley straps into the pilot's seat. Daniel and Rhodey, what are you guys doing?
I'm going to strap into a seat somewhere.
Yeah, I think Daniel's probably the last one in the ship. And like he gets on the ship, he like looks back over his shoulder and he just says, well, I guess she'll have to find her own way.
Oh, yeah. That made me think about, oh, you forgot that was Hannah.
Rhodey smiles again.
From the ventilation shaft. No, just kidding.
Yeah. Cool. So as you guys get into the ship, you see the lights flicker one more time, and then you hear that very horrifying sound of the power dying. And that sound that, look at the names, Dalton heard, he hears this. And you hear multiple of these seemingly coming very quickly towards you guys, coming down that long hallway. You can just hear it echoing. Well, actually, I don't know. The spaceship probably is pressure sealed, so you probably couldn't hear it.
Well, but you would still hear it if we're inside, you know, because it would be...
That's true, that's true. Rule of cool.
You know, if we have gravity and we have atmosphere, then...
As it gets nearer, at least, we'd hear it. Eventually,
maybe they make some other kind of noise. Like maybe they make like a high pitched kind of screeching noise.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's a good point. So maybe you hear something inside your head, and it's this like buzzing that gets louder and louder, and you feel like something is getting very close to you all.